Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580. Well, wasn't that a fun segment with Abbott Taylor? Lovely music. Folks, you got me as a solo for the balance of our show here on Circles of Change. It's a real pleasure for me to share some thoughts that I actually came up with to address a middle school audience and got quite a surprising connection with those young kids. Thought it important to share this with all of you. And the title of this segment then is Seven Axioms of Innovative Thinking. And as I said in the show intro, I'm not going to be dragging you through the same old, but rather hopefully provoke some unconventional wisdom and thoughts along this such important topic of bringing new ideas to the fore. Just a quick setup, of course, as many of you know, that I help companies change and, in fact, help leaders become better leaders and people change in their careers, really truly become more of who they are. That's based on my own background of being an engineer and being in the business world and having a wild amount of fun all along the venue. In fact, I almost went to art school earlier in my life. So to show you how those things circle back and now my involvement with my husband, indeed in the art world and the publishing world at the same time. So with that setup, this whole idea of being innovative, of doing things differently, of going outside the box, where there isn't even a box in my mind, has kind of landed these seven principles that I've enjoyed over the years, kind of refining living, making mistakes around that might be helpful to many of you. The first axiom is that sometimes expertise is the enemy of innovation, believe it or not. In other words, you can't do that actually means maybe you could do it that way or do it in a better way. And how often we hear in organizations, that's not the way we do it here, really means that maybe you know how to do it otherwise and you should step into that. And then finally, really to pay attention to the I dare yous to get that next place to go. And let me tell you a quick story. Early in my career when I was in the automotive business, we got the panic phone call. A group of us were involved in total vehicle development, so we were living between, interestingly enough, Arizona base here up in Mesa at the General Motors Proving Grounds and back east in Michigan. And under a panic call that one particular special show car we had developed, it was a prototype version of a Camaro, needed to be at a board of directors show the next week. And it had also had another coincidental commitment in Los Angeles. So suddenly the panic of how are we going to get the car from L.A. to New York City? And the logical thought was, well, we're going to put a bunch of people in, get them on the plane, fly out, and then drive it, hip-hop it across the country, or truck it, hip-hop it across the country. But it was a difficult time of year regarding the weather. There was also the uncertainties of whether or not we could even drive it in daylight because it was a prototype, and we really didn't want the media that were constantly hounding us to get a sneak preview of this car. So the real conundrum came. And I approached these middle school students, by the way, and I said, so what do you think you'd do? And one student popped up right away and say, well, I'd fly it across the country. In other words, pay attention to the I dare yous, but you don't have to do it the other way. Now, indeed, we almost did charter a plane to pull that off. We had, in fact, all in motion to do it. At the end of the day, though, a whole other question came up is, you know, they didn't tell us to send that exact car, did they? So bingo, the opportunity was we actually built a second vehicle and were able to get it to New York in due time. But the idea that your expertise ordinarily would have told you we needed to drive it or put it in a truck, as opposed to thinking beyond those domains. Number two is that, you know, quite honest, to be innovative, someone else has probably already solved your problem. But in other words, there are no new ideas, but there's a lots of new problems in different contexts. So it all starts then with our ability to frame a problem in a way that maybe we can learn from other people's experiences in other industries, even a group down the hall from you that might see the problem from a different standpoint because they'd solved it maybe in a different context, that it might be viewed as a marketing problem, but really as a financial services problem, or an engineering issue that was from one industry that, gee, they've already solved that in biotech. Why couldn't we that apply to our particular industry where we are? So it comes back to, and it almost reflects back to my first point, that it all starts and it restarts with asking the right question. I think I'd mentioned even earlier in this show today that my whole foray here into radio started with me shifting from saying, how do I find the right high-quality clients with whom I could launch this business, to instead, how do the right high-quality clients find me? And within an hour, suddenly the opportunity to potentially do a radio show crossed my path. So this was, oh my, an obvious thing to do. The other interesting step, though, to go be one step further, is at the close of that very first radio show, the producer said, wait a minute, don't go anywhere. Here's your disc. And it just struck me that, my word, you mean I get to keep the audio from these live productions? He says, absolutely. And I turned to my husband, Ted, and said, this isn't about live radio, Ted. This is about podcasts. And that's back in 2007, 2008 timeframe, prior to yet people loading up on their websites as much dynamic content as we benefit from today. So in other words, someone else had solved the problem, but I asked the right question that rippled me into yet another innovative space, which again at that time was really viewed as stepping out there before others, as indicated by the fact we have now over 900 segments out on thelarsengroup.com. And I'll save it for another day, but the next big innovation that came, of course, was when our folks in Los Angeles said, well, now you need to do a mobile site, at a time when I didn't even know what one of those critters was. Number three, then, remember that one size fits all never does, right? I mean, how many of us think you're going to buy a pair of shoes that's one size fits all? No. Or going to lease a building that one size fits all, or the criteria will naturally fit everyone? No. However, to be truly innovative, though, remember that icing can go a long way to customize the cake. In other words, that you can look on the outside of the veneer for what really matters to the customers or to those who might attract your product, but behind that wall might be indeed some one-size-fits-all, so you can build off the base from where you came from. The other idea of one-size-never-fits-all reflects into the publishing business that my husband is involved in, and it kind of started as this, and it goes back to a lot of questions, and that would be our asking talented artist Alan Martin, who's represented by nighthorses.com these days, that, you know, Alan, I noticed, you know, and you're looking at your repertoire of work, that you've never done a book before or a compendium of your work. And at that time, Alan was approaching 80. He says, yeah, well, you know, I'm approaching 80, and I guess I'm kind of, you know, too old to do a book at this point. To which Ted said, and I said, well, wait a minute. And I grabbed my calendar, flipped the pages back, and lo and behold, counted that we were 90 days to the Tucson Festival of Books in 2009. Well, as you might imagine, where this is going is, who said you can't do it? And by the way, if you've got the content, which he did, all of his work over the years already in high-end digital, and by the way, while Ted had never published a book before or even program managed one, hey, gotta believe, again, this no new problem idea, that he could use his program management skills and his insights on how to tap and pull the right professionals together as a team to indeed get a book, a high-quality one, ready to go in time for the Festival of Books. And lo and behold, indeed, 2 days before the show, a bit tight, I must imagine, that those 1,000 books showed up on our driveway, that we could get them then in the process and through the opportunity to now open a whole new series of doors. But the story here about one size fits all never does, the model that Ted used does, because subsequently here we are in 2012, just having debuted books number 6 and number 7, books that are every bit customized for the interested author or artist. So number one, expertise is the enemy of innovation. Be mindful. Number two, someone else has already solved your problem. And number three, one size fits all never does. But it doesn't mean you can't use icing on the cake in a different way. Number four, also that really is important to think about as a seven axiom of innovative thinking, is that time pressure kills creativity. And we heard that earlier in the segment today about the power and necessity of reflection, that actually reflection is work. In fact, it's really hard work. Or as I often say with clients, we need to go slow before we can go fast. And trust me, I'm the queen of fast, having involved in very fast race cars in my career from an engineering standpoint, also real radical changes that had to go fast to save a company that might have been in disarray. But still there's that element of needing to go slow before you go fast. In other words, we might be here 2 to 3 days or 2 to 3 weeks, but we need to be here to set the stage for what comes next. When I was at Pratt & Whitney, a quick story off to the side, I had just joined the organization, major role for engineering, manufacturing, ownership, and my boss at the time walked into my office, Vinnie Coletti, you've heard me mention him, one of the wonderful mentors, barely came up to my shoulder in height. He put his head in his hands and he was wringing his head back and forth saying, "Oh my gosh, we're going to reorganize the company." To which I jumped up and said, "Great, this is cool." And he looked at me like, "Are you out of your mind?" I said, "No, Vinny, you need to understand that taking advantage of an opportunity like this will allow us to shift and trade up faster than you can imagine. But we need to go slow first. We need to plant the seeds, build the trust with the people, 5,000 families across the whole country based in Florida that needed to be convinced, and also major programs moved at an important time of the industry at that point in time, the move north. But it also opened up the possibility to realize that there are a lot of people that couldn't come north for a variety of reasons. But what a prime possibility then to infuse our different portions of the company with new talent, and particularly people that would bring additional perspectives. But here was my point about the time pressure kills creativity, is that we took time to think and open our eyes of how to deal with a major disruption, actually take advantage of chaos in a way that would ease into setting a strategy for retaining the top talent we wanted to convince them and enable them to move north, as well as a strategy to attract the right new talent across the organization. Seven axioms of innovative thinking. We're on to number five now, and that is that, failure is always an option. Now, that sounds really twisted, doesn't it? In other words, how do we turn learning, though, into an opportunity to move forward? And it gets tricky, and it can also get sticky. The other piece of this tied in that failure is always an option is that, quite honestly, and Mark Samuel and I have spoken about this on the air a couple times, is that we cannot be afraid to succeed. And in fact, a lot of people, research will bear out, are more afraid of succeeding than they are of failing. And what that means is, quite honestly, if I succeed, that, oh my word, now the world, my boss, my peers, my family is going to expect even more of me. So maybe I want to stay just under the radar screen or stay where I am. So there's a greater apprehension to stepping out and succeeding. And the other piece of it is that we have to understand that the ways to understand how things get done may not even be written down yet. So we've got to take that risk. A quick story. When I was at Otis Elevator Company, one of the biggest challenges, of course, anyway, is how you can get elevators to the right floor at a time that the customers and the users of the elevator feel that that was the right kind of delivery and could get them to their next stop. Well, back in the 90s is when the whole opportunity to apply chaos theory, believe it or not, to the dispatching of elevators. Now, this is very, very high-end, cutting-edge software that was being utilized at the time and just evolving. Software many times, by the way, that we didn't even have the hardware platforms yet to support it in the magnificent technology-rich control rooms. But the idea being that, gee, could we have elevators self-learn, particularly knowing that the dynamics in a building are different between the morning, the afternoon, lunchtime in particular, and dinner, of moving people within large elevator buildings, particularly buildings that we often see, skyscrapers that have multiple banks of elevators. And is there a way we could apply chaos theory for them to get smarter on what they did, but then also learn and self-adjust based on seasonalities? The team at the time that was working for me within Otis, they viewed that, you know what, failure really is an option. They had to get out and try and press forward with the boundaries of the technology at the time. And as it turns out, a year-long effort did not give birth to what we had hoped would happen at that time. But yes, you know that there's a B case now to this business school story, and that is within 2 years, the technology caught up with the ability that our senior scientists and engineers knew to make happen. so that indeed, yes, believe it or not, elevators around the world, particularly high rises, are in the position of being self-learning. That tees up then another elevator analogy to number six, and that is that the only way to change our perspective is that many times we have to change the filters that we wear. And I said this earlier at the onset of my remarks that, you know, it's not about out-of-the-box thinking many times. It's about completely changing the box. And in fact, maybe you aren't even thinking and shouldn't be thinking about a box, but that it's a sphere or it's a pyramid that's been turned upside down. Let's go back to that elevator story. What we did do at the time was recognize that still it was a high customer dissatisfier that we had to wait. And I'm kind of chuckling here because I turned to the middle school audience that first heard these remarks at St. Gregory College Preparatory School a couple months ago. And I said, so if the issue is that people are having to wait, what do you think might be an answer to this? And someone in the front row piped up, well, let's put a television out in the lobby and give the people something to do. And someone else said, yeah, let's put it right inside the elevator so they're not, getting nervous and twitchy about the ride, quote, taking too long or that it's stopping at so many floors. To which I told them jokingly that indeed Otis did do that, by the way. But what we found out was happening is people wanted to stay in the elevator longer, so there wasn't a fast enough switch time for the passengers that were waiting outside that wanted to get in. And then lo and behold, the answer to the question I was really looking for, which was how do we change perspectives and change the filter, as a young lady in the front row says, well, put mirrors on the cover of the elevators to give some people something to do. And indeed, of course, that has been a decor and a choice by a lot of building owners for years, is to put mirrors in the front lobbies and also mirrors inside of elevators. Truth be told, folks, the reason why we did that is because people like to primp and prep and make sure they look fine for their next appointment or when they step out of the elevator. And it was all the genesis of that was we needed to recognize how could we control some more of the time so people weren't hesitating in waiting. So think about that the next time you walk up into an elevator that realize that particularly older buildings that don't have the mirrors in front of them, that was a trick of the trade. And it was all about changing our perspective. And it was about getting out of a box, a pyramid, or a sphere, and knowing that there was a whole never level or a strata that you can even go at to, probably pun intended, since a lot of these were high-rise elevators. Axiom number seven, let me review quickly. Number one, expertise is the enemy of innovation in many ways. The old, but we've never done it before, can get in our way. And I don't mean to be disrespectful of people with expertise, by the way, but just be mindful there's ways we can broaden our field of view. Number two, that someone else has already solved your problem. And that actually is where true innovation happens quite often, is we look how to cross over spaces and tap into the expertise from heat transfer or from design or from what's going on, in fact, benchmarking what's going on in one industry that could prompt an idea that's never been tried to before to solve your problem in a different business. Number three, one size fits all never does, in fact. Number four, that time pressure kills creativity. So for those of you listening in today, by the way, that are in charge of groups of people or are looking for ways to help your family struggle through some whatever decision is, use time on your side, not use it as something that has to be a lever to force prematurely the opportunity to observe and reflect and think through other opportunities. Number five was that failure is always an option, particularly though the caveat when you turn failure in such a way that it's learning and an opportunity to reapply what you've gained at the right time. Number six, that the only way to change your perspective oftentimes is to actually change the filters. In fact, you know, we often say that about our glasses, right? The different color lenses, if you're wearing shaded lenses at times, it's important to be able to deal with the glaring sun, but it also might cut out the fidelity of what you could see in someone's idea or some other perspective to help do what you need to do. And number seven, that relationships trump expertise every day. Relationships trump expertise any day. And at this point, I mean relationships of ideas, but most importantly is relationships with people. And so regardless of what access we might have to technology, to tools, to skills and like, it's to be able to relate to one another in ways that allows innovation to come forward at different people's time clocks, by the way. I can always recall people commenting about how Zara always seemed to hire all the lost souls or the homeless dogs or adopt the people that no one else would pick up. And yet her teams turned out to be some of the highest performing. And that probably stems from the fact that, you know, kind of being a redhead and being different from the get-go, I kind of sought out individuals that were different than the norm, but also setting up an environment that allowed people to be in true relationship with one another and celebrate our differences, not tolerate them, but celebrate them, push and lean into them in a stronger way. And those differences can mean within your teams at work, people with different backgrounds, individuals that come from different companies, different departments, different age groups, different educational life experiences to make that happen. Another way to put that, of course, is that really variety is the spice of life, and it's also the spotlight to allow you to eliminate those questions that might not make sense, but really illuminate the right question. And if I could draw on an example from friends of ours now here in Tucson, Alok and Jade from Fed by Threads, a wonderful organization there on 4th Avenue that's a dance studio open-air facility that they partner and allow other people to host yoga, drumming classes, and the like. And one day, given their background, someone approached them to say, you know, could you help us make a T-shirt? For they need X number for some event, and Alok stepped up and said, of course. And then he started to think about, well, why does a T-shirt have to be from this product? So maybe we should look at sustainable, economically friendly and eco-friendly products, namely recycled materials, beautiful fabrics that are used from recycled plastic in part, or hemp, believe it or not. And lo and behold, what gets birthed is the idea of Fed by Threads, because it was the convergence of providing these beautiful handmade or tightly made new products, but also a way to give back to not just the environment, but what was on their doorstep there in many parts of our lives today is people really being hungry and the poor, and not in distant countries, right here at home. And so Alok was thinking about doing something there in their organization that would generate the opportunity people drop off packaged goods and the like to help with the local soup kitchens and food houses. And lo and behold, he realized that no, what they really would benefit from, because they don't want to carry the inventory, is actually money. So what if for the sale of every one of their products, their shirts or their other products they have now today, it would come to benefit some food to get food on the table for the hungry? And lo and behold, in their first year, they collected funds to provide 21,000 meals to feed the hungry here in Tucson. It started with a relationship, though, that he was able, and Jade, to relate to other people in organizations, relate ideas. And you know what? Because people like you think like you, and they don't want you to change many times with the best of intentions, so they're surrounding themselves with new people. Or as I often jokingly say, watch for that quiet guy in the back row who's doodling in his Latin book, by the way, which is my cute characterization of our son, who's now off indeed a couple years later, in art school, majoring in sequential art and comic books. So expertise is the enemy of innovation. Someone else has already solved your problem. One size fits all never does. Time pressure kills creativity. Number 5, failure is always an option. Turn it to learning. Number 6, the only way to change perspectives is to change our filter. And number 7 is relationship trump expertise any day. That indeed is the core of what I do within my work at the Larson Group Architects of Change, whether it be working with individuals or companies, and hopefully principles that I use to guide my own life in the process.
Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it.